Did anybody bring their questions from last week? Yes, yes. There's a very important question. There are 8 very important questions on there. But there's one specific one that I want to get to. So, John, who came against Judah and to whom did Ahaz turn to help?
Three. Rezin, king of Syria, and Pekah, king of Israel. And he turned to Tiglath. I have to read my writing. It's not that easy.
Yeah, it's been a week since he did them. I understand.
He turned to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria.
Yes. And Jonathan, who did Ahaz reject and at what cost?
Rejected God at the cost of desolation of Israel.
Yeah. And what did Ahaz have constructed and what position did he give it, George?
He built a new altar and he kind of placed it in the spot where the altar of God was supposed to be.
Yeah, kind of.
Well.
Yeah. And so what happened? Marcus, do you have your... Yeah, so what happened?
The king of Assyria afflicted Ahaz by wanting him to pay tributes and everything. And Ahaz totally shut God out and worshiped the God of the Assyrians.
Okay. Now... Oh, go ahead.
Because he thought that the Assyrian gods helped.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so hold on, because we're going to get to, can you think of any observations and applications from this chapter? Can you not? We'll get to that in just in a few minutes. Okay, so this is going to be what we're about to do for the next few minutes. We're going to go from here to there. I'm going to have you have 4 fingers in different positions in your Bibles at the same time. 2 Kings 16. We'll read the first 4 verses, just review. In the 17th year of Pekah, the son of Remaliah, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, king of Judah, became king. Ahaz was 20 years old when he became king, and he reigned 16 years in Jerusalem, and he did not do what was right in the sight of the Lord his God, as his father David had done. But he walked in the way of the kings of Israel, and even made his son pass through the fire. According to the abominations of the nations whom the Lord had driven out from before the sons of Israel, he sacrificed and burned incense in the high places and on the hills and under every green tree. That's review. Now, verse 5, then Rezin, king of Aram, and so my version uses Aram because that's the word there. Do you remember if your ESV actually uses Syria? It does? Okay. Same people. One's an ethnicity or one's a smaller part of the bigger. They're the same people. So, king of Aram, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, came up against to Jerusalem to wage war, and they besieged Ahaz, but could not overcome him. So, we will now jump to Isaiah chapter 7. We'll get back to 2 Kings, but not for a few minutes. Isaiah chapter 7. So, Isaiah... Well, that was interesting. So Isaiah chapter 7. Now it came about in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin, and the king of Aram, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up to Jerusalem to wage war against it, but could not conquer it. So you see we're picking up exactly where we left off. When it was reported to the house of David, saying, the Arameans have camped in Ephraim, his heart and the hearts of his people shook as trees of the forest... shook as trees of the forest shake with the wind. All right, so here is the question. The question is, you read that again. The enemy's coming. His heart and the hearts of his people shook as the trees of the forest shake with the wind. Okay, is the shaking part good or bad? Bad. The shaking of the hearts is bad. Right. Because they're afraid. They shook as the trees of the forest. Now, you remember whose people these people are. They're not only the kings, but they're God's people. So the question is, why did these people shake? Why were they afraid?
They forgot that God was on their side. And they hadn't been trusting God for a while. So they...
Yes. You said they forgot that God was on their side. I took out the word that and I said, forgot God. Yes, so we're thinking the same thing. Now, you remember this passage. What then shall we say to these things? If God, then who can be against us? You probably remember this other one, Philippians chapter 4, verse 6. Be anxious for everything, but in nothing, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your... Now, that doesn't sound right, does it? Right? No. Be anxious for nothing. Look, this guy's coming. Okay, I'll just submit whatever I have, whatever problem I have. I'm going to say, dear God, help me overcome this problem. Psalm 23. Keep your finger in Isaiah. There's one finger. Turn to Psalm 23. You've probably heard this psalm before. I read it the way I interpret it. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You have anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and loving kindness will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Nothing can touch him. That's what this is saying. Look, I go in and I have dinner in the midst of my enemies. Now, normally that's not what you do, right? You're not sitting there calmly, I'll take my next glass of juice, thank you. No, usually your knees are shaking and your heart is shaking. Let's see, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they went into the big furnace of fire. And the king jumps up and says, there's a fourth one in there. Now, it doesn't say they were eating food, but they could have been. Because that's what God can do. Daniel in the lion's den. This is a perfect illustration of this. Daniel in the lion's den, instead of being prepared for dinner, that's what this... Look, when you go in amongst your enemies, they are going to eat you alive. That's what we say. But he says, no. I go in and I sit down. I am at perfect peace with my God, and I am calm because my God is protecting me. Last week, keep your finger in Isaiah. You can take your finger out of Psalm 23. Last week, I mentioned 2 Kings chapter 6, where Elisha, the king of Aram, is trying to get Jehoram. Is it Jehoram? I think it's Jehoram. Even if it's the wrong king. He's trying to get the king. And Elisha keeps on saying, he's over here. The king of Aram's over here. And so finally, the king of Aram finds out who it is, what he's doing, and come to get Elisha. And Elisha's servant goes outside and he sees the city is surrounded by the enemy. And Elisha says, open up your eyes spiritually. And then he blinds the people. Verse 18, when they came down to him, Elisha prayed to the Lord and said, strike this people with blindness. So he opens the eyes of his servant and strikes with blindness the enemy's eyes. Verse 19, then Elisha said to him, this is not the way. This is not the way. This is like the force. This is not the way. This is not the way. This is not... Verse 19. They are trying to get Elisha.
No, the scripture. I'm sorry.
Oh, 2 Kings 6:19. Elisha said to them, this is not the way, nor is this the city. Follow me, and I will bring you to the man to whom you seek. And when they had come into Samaria, Elisha said, open up the eyes, O Lord, of these men, that they may see. So the Lord opened their eyes, and they saw, and behold, they were in the midst of their enemies. Okay, they came to attack, but they find themselves blinded temporarily, and when they open up their eyes, they are in the enemy's camp. The king of Israel, then, when he saw them, he said to Elisha, my father, shall I kill them? Shall I kill them? He's going to kill them. But Elisha says, no, give them some food. And he gives them food. This is what Psalm 23 is talking about, although the rules are reversed here. But God said to them, do not kill. And so they did not kill, and they had a meal. The point is, our God can do that. And so whatever your problem is, trust God, right? Now, it's easy to say this. Well, you know, it's Thursday, 7:30, May, whatever the date is, 19th, 20th, something, 2016, in Philadelphia, New York, because there's nothing going on here. Nobody's coming through the door trying to get Lee to persecute him because of his faith. So it's easy to talk about it now, but it's important to remember it when the rubber hits the road, as we say. Comments or questions here? George?
Perhaps I'm putting this a lot of context because it's been a while since I've been in the first part of Isaiah. But they're shaking in their boots, as it were, might also have to do with the fact that Isaiah had started prophesying to them things like, where was the one instance I had here? 3:17, therefore the Lord will strike out with a scab on the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion and cover their secret parts and take away, etc., and leave it. You know, so if they have been listening at all so far by chapter 7, I mean, maybe they're making some sort of connection.
And Micah has been running around.
Right, right, yeah.
And Hosea and Amos also. Yeah, exactly. Right, maybe they're making a connection. Remember this about Ahaz. Ahaz's sin, his lack of faith, affects not only his religious life, but it turns his entire life into chaos. And that's what sin does. It just affects me in this category over here. No, it affects your entire life. Okay, so with your finger back in Isaiah 7. Oh, sorry.
Just a very modern day persecution, but with this whole thing with transgender bathrooms, you know, with your kids, you know, you think safety of your kids and stuff, you know, it's like, well, we still have to trust God. You know, we know we're living in, it's just getting worse and worse, but we have to trust God.
Yeah. Now. Yeah, the rubber is going to start hitting the road more often.
It's the same thing, like, all of the time when Lot was dealing with Sodom and Gomorrah. And yet he was still faithful to God through all that.
In fact, in his faithfulness, he was also doing what? He just wasn't tolerating it. He was also
exposing it.
Yeah, sorry, and exposing it. He was called a preacher of righteousness. You shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be doing that. Tough work, but we've got to do it. All right, so They're shaking in their boots. Chapter 7, Isaiah chapter 7. And by the way, we'll cover chapter 7 when we get to Isaiah 7. Right now we're not in Isaiah 7. The Lord said to Isaiah, go. The short of it, verse 7, it shall not stand, it shall not come to pass. For the head of Aram is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin. Now within another 65 years, Ephraim will be shattered, so that it is no longer a people. And the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is the son of Rehoboam. If you will not believe, surely you will not last. Okay, the question is not whether or not Aram and Israel will last. That's not the question. Everybody knows. Well, God knows. God knows. Aram and Israel are going to fall. The question is Ahaz going to fall with them? Satan, we like to say that Satan always loses. It's true. In fact, he's already lost. The question is, which side am I going to choose? That's what we're waiting for, to see how many people are going to choose Satan's side and how many people are going to choose God's side. Interrupt me with a comment or a question if you have one. Verse 10, then the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, "Ask." Here goes our God again, giving him another chance, another chance. This is what our God, he's the God of second chances. Then the Lord spoke again to Ahaz, saying, "Ask a sign for yourself from the Lord your God, and make it as deep as Sheol or as high as heaven," just whatever you can think of. And the idea is, it's supposed to be something that's going to get your attention. That's the point of a sign. Well, Ahaz says, "I won't." He's a hypocrite here. We'll talk about this when we get to Isaiah 7. But God says to him, verse 13, "Listen now, O house of David, is too slight the thing for you to try the patience of men, that you will try the patience of my God as well? Therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin with a child will bear a son, and she will call his name Emmanuel." All right, I say again, we'll cover this text when we get there. But always remember that no matter where we are in the text, the story is really about Jesus. And sometimes we see a little breadcrumb. Oh, it's another breadcrumb about here we are. We're talking about Ahaz and Syria and Assyria, but it's really about God. Verse 17. The Lord will bring on you, on your people, and on your father's house such days as have never come since the day that Ephraim separated from Judah, the king of Assyria. And in that day, verse 18, verse 20, in that day, verse 21, in that day, verse 23, in that day, it's going to be bad. Before we get to that day, you can take your finger out of Isaiah and put it in 2 Chronicles chapter 28. 2 Chronicles chapter 28, verse 5. Wherefore, the Lord his God delivered him into the hand of the king of Aram, and they defeated him and carried away from him a great number of captives. And you know the rest of the story because you read it just recently, that the northern kingdom is dragging away captives from the southern kingdom. It doesn't sound like Ahaz's plan worked. God says, here, trust me. Ahaz says, no, thank you. Next thing we read, Ahaz is losing. Whenever God has a suggestion for you, take it. Take his help. The way he offers it. Don't play games with him. No, he offers you help. Take the help the way he offers it. Or else you'll end up like Ahaz. George, you want to say something? Okay.
I do.
Yes.
I think it's interesting there where the suggestion God has is, or his response to God is, no, I won't put you to the test. Well, the difference was is that in the New Testament, it's Satan tempting Jesus, and Jesus responds,
yep,
thou shalt not put the Lord thy God to the test.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the Old Testament, it's the good guy.
Yeah.
You know, making the offer.
Yeah.
He comes up with that response.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk more about that. I mean, good, thank you. Well, I'm not going to skip over that when we come to Isaiah 7 because there's a whole bunch of stuff in there. But just for tonight, I'm skipping over that. So verse 5, the Lord his God delivered him into the hand of King of Aram. And then, so he's beat up. Look at verse 16. At that time, he has just been beat up by Aram and Israel. At that time, verse 16, Ahaz sent to the kings of Assyria for help. For again, the Edomites had come and attacked Judah and carried away some of the captives, and the Philistines also had invaded in the lowland and the Negev of Judah, and so far. So, in other words, they're getting beat up left and right. Verse 19, for the Lord humbled Judah because of Ahaz, king of Israel, for he had brought about a lack of restraint in Judah and was very unfaithful to the Lord. Stop there, keep your finger there, turn back to 2 Kings 16. Verse 7, so Ahaz sent messengers to Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, saying, I am your servant and your son. Come up and deliver me from the hand of the king of Aram and from the hand of the king of Israel, who are rising up against me. Ahaz took the silver and gold that was found in the house of the Lord and in the treasuries of the king's house and sent a present to the king of Assyria. So the king of Assyria listened to him. Understand what he has just done. He has said to God, no thank you, God. I won't become your vassal king. There's kings, and then there's the kings that are under them. I used to think, when I was a young boy, the king was the king of, like, America. But then I grew up and realized, no, some kings were just kings of, like, Philadelphia. I'm the king of Philadelphia. And then there's the king of Jefferson County. And then there's the king of New York. And then there's the king of... So that's the way it goes. Well, here, the king of, for example, New York, submits himself. He has a choice. My choice is this. You can submit yourself to God and become his servant, or, no thank you, I'll become the servant of the king of Assyria. You're going to be somebody's servant. You're going to be. Why in the world, who in here would have chose that? Who in here would like to think they wouldn't have chose that? I'm going to read a passage to you. See if this doesn't apply to you. Do you not know that when you present yourselves to someone as slaves for obedience, you are slaves of the one to whom you obey, either of sin resulting in death or of obedience resulting in righteousness? Does that not apply to every single person in here? Every one of us has said, no, thank you, God. I'll go serve myself. I'll go serve Satan at some time. And when we do that, we say, here, Satan, here I am with my will and all of my resources. I'm ready to give you all of my resources. Just like Ahaz back here. Oh, we wouldn't do something as stupid as Ahaz. No, we'd do something stupider. Okay. So the king of Assyria listened to him. Then, verse 10, King Ahaz went to Damascus to meet Tiglath-Pileser, the king of Assyria, and saw the altar which was at Damascus. And King Ahaz sent to Uriah the priest the pattern of the altar and its model according to all its workmanship. So Uriah the priest built an altar according to all that King Ahaz had sent from Damascus. Thus Uriah the priest made it before the coming of the king Ahaz from Damascus. When the king came from Damascus, the king saw the altar. Then the king approached the altar and went up to it and burned his burnt offering and his meal offering and poured out his drink offering and sprinkled the blood of his peace offerings on the altar. The bronze altar, which was before the Lord, he brought from the house of the Lord and from between his altar and the house of the Lord and put it on the north side of his altar. So here you have the altar and here you have the temple. And he says, I'm going to make another altar and I'm going to move where this one is and I'll put mine right there. Brains. Genius. Well, verse 17, King Ahaz cut off the borders of the stands and removed the laver from them. And he took down the sea from the bronze oxen which were under it and put the cavemen of stone. The covered way for the Sabbath which he built in the house, the outer entry of the king, he removed from the house of the Lord because of the king of Assyria. So now he's got himself in a situation where he is not only introducing his own worship into Jehovah worship, but he's also taking away parts of the temple because the king of Assyria wanted him to. Well, that was smart. That was some contract. So, we turn back to 2 Chronicles 28. What?
It reminds me also of Hezekiah.
Yes?
When he told the people from Babylon, look at all this great stuff that I have and all this. And I don't know if it was Isaiah, I think it was, said, why'd you do that? That wasn't smart.
No, that was not smart. Right. These very people who you have showed your stuff to are going to come back and attack you. 2 Chronicles 28, verse 20. So Tiglath-Pileser, or Pilneser here, king of Assyria, came up against him and afflicted him instead of strengthening him. That's funny. I guess Ahaz's idea didn't work, did it? Right? Although Ahaz took a portion out of the house of the Lord and out of the palace of the king and the princes and gave it to the king of Syria, it did not help him. Now, in the time of his distress, the same king Ahaz became yet more unfaithful to the Lord. Because here are your choices. Number one, you repent. The other choice is you quit and you get more and more into sin. Those are your choices. In the time of his distress, the same king Ahaz became yet more unfaithful to the Lord. And it goes on and on until he dies. Now, I ask the question from here. Can you think of any observations and applications from this chapter, from this reading that we have just done? Did you have any answers? Anybody? Anyone? Any observations? Any applications?
Well, when something isn't working, doubling down rarely helps.
Right. When something's not working, John just said the same thing I did, but better. I said, you've got a choice. You can repent or not. And John said, look, he's doing that, and he doesn't repent. He just does more of the same. It doesn't work. Marcus.
Well, if you shut God out, things just get worse. They don't get better.
Right. When you shut God out, things don't get better. They get worse, and they get worse, and they get worse. George? Shirley?
A couple.
Oh, dear.
Human nature doesn't appear to be well apt in terms of picking the lesser two evils.
Yeah.
Tiglath laser was as bad as any other option you could have gone for. And, also, it was interesting to me to think, I had back up here the dedication of the temple. And as for this house, which is exalted, everyone who passes by, if Israel sins, will be astonished and say, why has the Lord done this to the land and this house? And they will answer, because they forsook the Lord God. And so one of the others, I mean, I've got a long list, but the other main one that I was thinking of is the fact that it's the general point of sin taking you further. You know, this unthinkable thing. The people then would not have been thinking this would have been, the temple would be dismantled by one of their own.
Yeah.
You know, and that this was essentially begun by the king himself. It's just absolutely appalling. Mm-hmm. This is not something coming from the outside, this outer thing they're trying to, I mean, in a sense it is, but when it comes right down to it, it's his hands, you know, that accomplishes this.
Yeah, I'm reminded of Acts chapter 20, where Paul says to the elders, it's going to come in from among you. That's not from the outside. That's from within the congregation itself. Okay, careful with those hands. This is like an auction. Yeah.
George reminded me of that verse that it's not a man to direct his own steps.
Yeah, Jeremiah 10.
Okay.
Yep, great. One of the memory verses. I find it interesting that Ahaz looks at an altar. Paul looks at an altar. Paul says, let me tell you about that altar. You need to repent. Ahaz is curious and likes it and takes it and makes it his own. Some people are not prepared to look, to be exposed to the altar, whatever it is. Some people are. Some people, with maturity, here it is, and you take that person and you use them one way. And the other person, you guard them and you protect them. You say, you don't need to look at the altar yet. You can't handle it. You're going to do the wrong thing. Couple points from here. Anybody else? Anything else? A cruel irony. Ahaz would call to Assyria for salvation. God would use Assyria for Israel's destruction. What's the irony? Unless it is God, the very thing we think is our salvation is actually our idol and the vehicle to our destruction. I wonder, when Assyria came and conquered Rezin, which we read, did Ahaz think he was getting away with something before God? Because remember, before Assyria came, God said, come to me for help. And Ahaz said, no, thank you. And God said, Assyria is going to beat you up. But then what happens is Assyria actually comes and helps. So I wonder if Ahaz was thinking, ha-ha, I got God on that one. But we know the end of the story. In the end, what God said would happen was, like, don't ever think you're getting away with something. Let me repeat that. Don't think you're getting away with something. Don't do it.
One of my observations was God is alive and paying attention.
Yeah.
Even if you think he's not.
Right. Yeah. I'm going to make the same point in a few minutes. We know what happened. We know the history. Assyria came and destroyed both those countries. You can look it up in the history books and you can look it up in the Bible. We know what happened. God, being outside of time and wise and all-knowing and everything else that God is, knew exactly what was going to happen. Isaiah 46:10, he says he declares from the beginning what will happen at the end. He can tell you because he's outside of time. However, Ahaz didn't know what would happen. He's in a state of, I say, insecurity. He's thinking, what's going on right now? I'm shaking. What's going on? What's going to happen? Have you ever been there? Have you ever been in a familiar situation? You're like, I just don't know what's going on. Well, God knew and he told Ahaz what was going to happen. And we know, and we now see that it did happen, just like God said it would. So what's the point? Trust God. In matters of history, in matters of building the church, in matters of personal character development, in matters of individual, it doesn't matter what it is. Just trust God. Trust him. Now, again, we say, it's easy to say that right now. I'm among my brethren. I'm not facing any temptation right now. In fact, it actually never was anything to worry about. So it is with anything if you trust God. I was thinking of something. Where is my... Well, I had some thought there, but I've lost it. Comments or questions? Good. A word about syncretism. Anyone? Learn this word. It's not in the Bible, but we just read it. Syncretism, a combination of different forms of beliefs or practice. A combination, a mixing of forms of belief or practice. Take two religions, stick them together. From the Greek, think synkretismos or something like that. A union of communities. From syncretizing, to combine against a common enemy. From soon, which is together. And the second element is of uncertain origin. They don't know exactly what it is. One theory connects it with lying, from to lie like a Cretan. So you're taking two liars and you're putting them together. Or you're taking one liar and putting it with the truth, either. Another connects it with the stem of to mix, to blend, or a mixture. It's to take two things and put them together. Now, we just read that in 2 Kings chapter 16. He went to Damascus and he saw an altar and he said, I'm going to take that and I'm going to use it in my worship to God. So, is that a good thing or a bad thing? I mean, after all, he's worshiping God.
Still a bad thing.
Bad? Don't be so judgmental, Ethan. Come on now. What? Supposed to be? Why?
Is it clear to you that he was using that to worship Jehovah? Or...
Okay. Whatever he was doing.
Okay.
You're right. I might have gone too far when I said he was using it to worship Jehovah. I think he was. How clear that is. But he now he's got two different religions. He's mixed them together. Is what we're talking about here. That's what he did too.
They had all kinds
Say it again.
At the very least, they had all kinds of other places of worship other than
the high places.
The temple, whatever. And
yep.
He takes the altar and puts it in that one.
Yes.
And moves God's altar.
Right.
So they're worshiping Jehovah, they're worshiping this God, they're worshiping that God. He moves Jehovah's altar and puts this new one there.
Yeah.
He didn't, you know, replace the Ashtaroth idol or whatever.
Right.
New high place. He stuck it in that spot.
Yeah, whatever's going on, he's taking elements from different religions and combining them. Whether or not he's actually combining him to worship Jehovah, although maybe it's sometimes now I'm worshiping Jehovah, now I'm worshiping the gods of Aram, one of the two. Do you have a thought?
Well, I kind of read into it, I think, that he was trying to please Tiglath-Pileser. Look, I'll worship your God.
Yeah. Right.
So.
Yeah, whatever he's doing, he's taken two religions and he mixed them together, which is a good idea if you have the right motive, right? No, to be clear here, no, it's not a good idea if you have the right motive, because as I said to Ethan a second ago, I said, why not? And he said, because God said so. But we could be a little bit more forceful than that. Because God said so. That's why. Go ahead.
So in this case, doing something wrong, purpose is irrelevant.
That's right. Purpose matters, but purpose is not all that matters. Sincerity matters, but sincerity is not all that matters. Following the prescription exactly matters, but it's not all that matters. Right. So don't misquote me. I never said purpose is the only thing that matters. Okay. This is good or bad. This is bad. Can you think of a New Testament passage that says, you know, just go ahead and, you know, do what you want, because it doesn't really matter what you want as long as you're worshiping God. Can you think of a New Testament passage that says that?
Well, if you read the passages that don't address the issue whatsoever... I mean, this is ecumenicalism, right? Today.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just an excuse to be as careless as possibly, you know, I mean, just comprehensively without any care whatsoever.
To not judge, it's an excuse not to judge anybody but the person who is judging somebody. That's the only person. And so it refutes itself. But, okay, so, you know, 2 Corinthians chapter 1 Corinthians 4, 16, 17. I'm going to send Timothy to remind you of my ways. And you hold firm to these traditions. Look up the word tradition and go from there. Do not add, do not take away. 2 John 9, other places. Can you think of some modern examples? Let me ask you this. What are you worried about might creep into this congregation's formal service to the Lord? I mean, because we're not We're not an island. No man is an island. No church is an island. We are surrounded by people and culture. And in, do you want to say something? No? Okay, sorry. I thought you... anybody? Anything? No worries.
Well, just things that we consume media and what's around, you know, because it has come from over the ages of where, okay, well, a divorce was a horrible thing. Now it's like, well, they got divorced. And then it came to, you know, oh, they're sleeping together. And now, you know, now we got to homosexual marriage. And it's starting to get, well, you know, that's just part of life. And it just keeps on going from there. And it can creep inside the church also.
Did anybody hear the question I asked? Because that's not the question I asked. Hold on a second. That's actually not the question I asked. But that's the only example I have written down. I asked, actually, about the form of when the church is together. When, you know, and I'm thinking about a woman standing up here. And I'm thinking about instrumental music. And I'm thinking about all these things. But the only thing I actually wrote down was worldliness creeping into the church, which is exactly your answer. When I came back here just a few months ago now, I met with somebody and I said, what's your worry about the congregation? Do you know, have I missed something since I've been gone or whatever? Maybe I missed something while I was here too. And their answer was worldliness creeping into the church. Into this congregation, to be specific. Creeping into the church. Yeah, what does that mean? No, keep creeping into this congregation. If yours is a wise answer, then mine was too, because it's the same one. But so it can take that form of the what's going on in our individual lives, and then it can also take the and then we bring it as an individual. I bring it into the into how about if I have an attitude that is totally casual? Everything is casual. Okay, I am under the impression that when it comes to thinking about God, we are to be reverent. I'm guessing everybody here agrees with me on that. Now, that might take different forms, but at the same time, there's totally casual. Mr. Casual, Mrs. Casual walks in, saunters in, and gives the impression, at least, that this is just a casual thing.
I think you check off my list.
Yeah, check it off, and check it off real casually. You know? I'm not here to judge the different ways that are casual. Today I wore jeans. Did you notice that? That's casual for me. Okay? I'm not here to pick apart all the different things, but if we have this attitude where this is nonchalant, I'm coming to worship my Lord today, then we need to be careful. And I will bring that to the congregation. And then guess who else is going to do it? 1, 2, 3, 4. We just need to be careful of these kinds of things. Comments or questions here?
That involves examining ourselves.
Yep.
Seeing.
Don't talk to me like that.
Lee.
Yes.
It's interesting to note that our forms of corporate worship might remain the same, but our attitudes could still develop in a very bad direction while all that stuff looks pretty normal. I mean, the sinfulness from the world could creep in and we could still be following the...
Yep.
The correct standard in terms of our corporate...
The Lord's traditions.
Yeah.
It's His word.
Yeah, no.
I like it.
I don't deny that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, He gives us traditions. And yeah, we keep the traditions. We need to keep the traditions, but we have to have... So traditions aren't all that matters. Sincerity and good attitude and purpose matters too. You're holding back.
Yeah, well... Traditions and teachings are the same. They're the same word.
Yeah.
I mean, in the Greek. And I hate using traditions, the English word traditions, when I mean teachings, mm-hmm. because there's the thing about the traditions of men.
Mm-hmm.
And it is, you know, important to understand the difference and use the one.
You mean the teachings of men?
Depends on your translation.
Yeah, I know. Right.
But yep. There are... teachings that we keep and we should.
Yeah.
There are traditions that things have passed down over time of the way we do things that need to be looked at by every generation.
Yeah.
And
they can be fine.
Right.
They can be great.
Right. So long as they're consistent with the teachings.
Yeah.
And that I think is a distinction that's worth hanging on to.
Oh yeah.
At least be aware of.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, and we're not talking about changing our expediences. You know, we have red chairs and then those things. You know, and that works for. That's not what we're talking about changing. We're talking about changing the Lord's Supper from Sunday to Thursday. Why? Because other people do it on Friday, and so if we offer it on Thursday, we'll just get them. We could go on and on and on and on. Yep.
If you once you start down that road, there's nowhere to stop.
Yeah. And that's the lesson with the individual and with the congregation. Once you leave. Okay.
One more thing here. Go back.
Oh, dear.
One of the ways that the Catholic Church has been successful in a worldly way around the world is exactly this. They'll go into a local area.
And take.
So that, oh, no, you're not giving up this, but we're going to add this to it.
And yeah.
That's what they've done.
Right.
And
yeah. And in that way, they are they successful? Yes. At what?
The wrong thing.
That's the wrong thing. Exactly.
It's not just the wrong thing, but in a way, nothing at all.
Yeah.
They're successful at nothing because they've accepted anything as success. You see the Pope's quote about, we're essentially going to get together and do a study about whether or not we can ordain women for the clergy. I could think it's a great verses for that study.
Yeah. How long was that study?
They're like setting up an 11-month process with these special people that are going to look at the way the world changes.
For the clergy. They've already accepted the clergy.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're, you know, that's one of the changes. That's one of the Bible talks about that change coming. Okay. So, I need to figure out what exactly it is I'm doing here. What am I doing here? I do have a map up there, but why do I have that map up there? Okay. All right. So, I'm done with Ahaz. Moving on back into Hoshea chapter 17, 2 Kings chapter 17. We'll basically camp there. No more fingers needed. In the 12th year of Ahaz, the king of Judah, Hoshea, the son of Elah, became king over Israel and Samaria and reigned 9 years. We read this last week. He did evil in the sight of the Lord, not only as the kings of Israel who were before him. Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria, came up against him, and Hoshea became his servant and paid tribute. But the king of Assyria found conspiracy in Hoshea, who had sent messengers to So, king of Egypt, and had offered no tribute to the king of Assyria, as he had done the year by year. So the king of Assyria shut him up and bound him in prison. Then the king of Assyria invaded the whole land and went up to Samaria and besieged it 3 years. In the 9th year of Hoshea, the king of Assyria captured Samaria and carried Israel away into exile to Assyria and settled them in Halah and Habor on the river of Gozan and the cities of the Medes. My whole point in bringing up this lovely map is to say something I said last week. In the world, what's going on in the world at this time? Syria wants to know if they're trying to be king. Egypt is also at the same time, and Assyria is. So there's lots of activity going on in here. Activity. And all of this activity, in the middle of it, there are some people there who are supposed to be doing what? What?
Being God's ambassadors.
Being God's ambassadors. What?
Following God.
Following God. People are supposed to... That's what Hoshea was supposed to be doing. Now, in all of this, now we read about world events right here in these few chapters. But this was just a guy. Now, he had some responsibility too, right? He was a man with responsibility living in his time. That's what he was doing. Are any of you in here men? Are you living? Do you have responsibility? Are you living in your time? Any of you in here women? And just substitute that with the rest of it. So there's no difference. There might be difference in the impact on the world, you know, but as far as just looking at I've got some things that God has given me to do. In fact, Acts chapter 17. Acts 17 talks about each of us. Verse 26. He made from one man every nation of mankind to live on all the face of the earth. Ethan, do you live somewhere on the face of the earth?
Yes.
Are you one of the men from every nation of mankind? Yes. So then, this is talking about you. Having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation, that they would seek God. So whether you're Tony, oh, by the way, Tony, tell me something. Where were you born? Down here? Somewhere down there, right? Solda, you were born right about, let's see, let me find it here, right about there. Probably a little bit left of there. But Jessica's not here tonight. Marcy was born there, which is a lot better than being born in New Jersey, which is where Mindy was, and Rob. I was born up there. Woohoo! Anybody else in here born?
I was born up by you.
Yes, thank you. Boy, we're outnumbered. Where were you born, Marcus?
Germany.
Munich? North, south, where? Middle. Good enough. That place. He needs a tissue. John? Montana or California? So, like, right there, close enough. Rhonda? California? California. Over there. And my mom was born down there in the jungle with monkeys and stuff. We have some friends, very close friends, born over there. Actually, a little bit more like there. Anybody else? Anything else? Who am I missing here? You two, you're born in New York State. Yes, finally.
Washington.
You? Oh, you two. I meant to. I knew you guys were funny. And Janice? Maryland. Okay. Maryland, right. So I'm a little messed up. You're from Illinois?
Indiana.
Yeah, you're from there. Okay. All right, so here we are. God has appointed. Let's read that again. You know, why wasn't I born wherever, whenever? Having determined their appointed times and the boundaries of their habitation. You are going to live here then. That's what God has said. And while you're there, it's if you will perhaps find him. So you might not have a decision that will impact whether or not Assyria becomes a global power. But we're all in the same boat. We're all in the same situation. We all have just to, you know, when we were in Hungary this last year, two things were going on that were huge. Number one, Putin. And all these people, do you know what they're talking about? What is Putin going to do? They're afraid. And then we have the refugees right past our house. I mean, 5 minutes from our house. Right past it. And the Hungarians are scared out of their mind. And the Europeans, they think it's going to change Europe. And it is going to change Europe. But what are they supposed to do? Trump or Hillary? Who are you for? Oh, man. But Trump really redeemed himself today because he came out with that impressive list of Supreme Court of the United States appointees that he might pick from somebody. Yes, because that's going to save us. No, it's not. But when I saw the list, and I don't know who these people are, but I know people who know who they are. And I say, what do they say? And they say, it's good. I say, yes, that's great. Is it good? Yes. Because God wants us, his people, to be able to do his work on the earth. But if it doesn't happen, God still wants his people to do his work on the earth.
This was exactly the application I had in mind with my observation about our ability to choose the lesser of two evils successfully.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you can stick your tongue out again because that's appropriate. Okay. Right, so chapter... Yeah, thank you. Chapter 17. I'm in Acts. That's the problem here. I was in chapter 17, but it didn't look right on the page. Verse 7, now this came about because, stop here. They're deported because. Do you know the answer already without reading it?
Yes.
This came up. What's the answer?
They sinned.
Because they sinned. How do you know that?
No.
Yes, no, that's a good answer.
Anywhere it says bad happened because the next thing is.
It says.
There were promises.
There were promises. God told them, if you sin, I will take you out of the land. There are not going to be surprises. There are not the day of judgment. It's not going to be nobody is going to say, oh, I didn't know that. Nobody is going to. We all know who loses. He's already lost. The question is, are we going to join him or not, Ethan?
Deuteronomy 28.
It's yeah.
Like if you go, that's what you were referring to. I mean, if you disobey me, all this bad stuff is going to happen. And you read that list, and there's a lot of bad things in there.
Right, including this. Okay, so it came about because Israel had sinned. That's what we call a summary statement. Right? They sinned. That's all we really need to know. It goes on against their God who had brought them out. Verse 7, the end of it, they feared other gods. They walked in the customs of the nations whom the Lord their God had driven out before the sons of Israel, and in the customs of the kings of Israel which they had introduced. But by the way, the kings are some of those who introduced the customs, which is what George was talking about earlier. The kings are supposed to be the ones who are what? Guarding them, the old ways. There is the question, who will guard the guards? It's putting the responsibility back up. Yes, the king was supposed to, but when the king messes up, when the nation goes down the tubes, whose fault is it? The king's. Yes, but not only the king's, it's ours too. Somebody had a hand. Yep. Up.
That's why, I mean, because it says they fear the other gods, they walk in the customs of the other nations. God had told them when they were going into the land, destroy these people or else you will follow the same gods and the other things as they. So.
And they didn't, and he left them in there.
And they didn't, and guess what? What God said came true.
Huh. That's interesting. The sons of Israel did sin secretly. Because, you know, God doesn't know if you do it secretly. I don't know if you know that yet. But moreover, they built for themselves the high places and the watchtower and the fortified city. They set themselves for themselves the Asherim. And they burned incense, verse 11, on all the high places of the nations which the Lord had carried. And they did evil things provoking the Lord. There's a list in here. Huh, there's a list of the things they did wrong. And this is obviously not a complete list. You can go to other places and read more. But there is a list. Can you think of a place where it says, be careful because God's keeping a list? It doesn't say that exactly. Revelation. Right? Revelation chapter 20. Revelation 20, I saw a great white throne. Verse 12, I saw the dead, the great and the small, standing before the throne. The books were open. Another book was open, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged from the things which were written in the book according to their deeds. God is keeping a book. Literally, no. But the point is, he comes down to our land. We live with books, and we make records in books. And the idea is, God is keeping a list. And if you're not with him, he's going to read that list back to you. Here's an example of it. And then he's going to condemn you for it. Verse 12, they served idols. Verse 13, verses basically 7 through 12 is what they did do. Verse 13 is what they did not do, if you will. The Lord warned them through all of his prophets, every seer. It's not like they didn't have choice or knowledge. Turn away from your evil ways and keep my commandments, my statutes among all the law which I commanded your fathers and which I sent you through my servants, the prophets. However, they did not listen, but they stiffened their neck, like the neck of their fathers, who did not believe in the Lord their God. They rejected his statutes and his covenant which he made with their fathers and with his warnings with which he warned them. And they followed vanity and became vain and went after the nations which surrounded them, concerning which the Lord had commanded them, do not do like them. They forsook all the commandments of their Lord, which the Lord their God, and made for themselves molten images, two calves, and made an Asherah, and worshipped all the hosts of the heaven, and served Baal. And then they made their sons and their daughters pass through the fire, practicing divination and enchantments, and sold themselves to do evil in the sight of the Lord, provoking him, so that the Lord was very angry with Israel, and removed them from his sight. None was left except for the tribe of Judah. Huh. Did you notice in verse 12 it said they served idols? They're kicked out of the land for, among other things, serving idols. boy, am I glad that we can't serve idols today, because that's something of the past. So tell me an idol in the New Testament. Yes? Well, you've been thinking about this. That's right. Yourself. Yes, me and convenience. And I don't want this problem. Right. Anything else?
Cars, houses, jobs? I mean,
whatever it is. Whatever it is. An idol is something, anything that you stick in front of God. In the New Testament, greed in the New American Standard is called idolatry, Colossians chapter 3. You have a thought?
I did, but it wasn't an answer to your question.
Okay. Then hold it. Okay. Is it relevant and good?
I think it's relevant.
Well, then let's go.
It's so interesting to see the concept. These verses that you just read do not say, and this happened because he moved the altar. Okay? Which means there's a serious point here to be made about delayed consequences.
Yeah.
And the relationship, almost like a cyclical relationship between consequences and the sin, because the thought process can be had here. Look, these things are happening because of stuff they did way back when. So, God remembers. And the sin that he is doing now is more just the mechanism by which he accomplishes the punishment for the old sin. But then the sin of now, in these verses, is the same kind of sin from then. So it's a moot point. They're sinning, and what do you know? They suffer consequences for that sin, even if the punishment is technically looking back to the fulfillment of a promise for old, you know, it's just all there. It always covers. But the delayed consequence for the action here that came from way back, that cannot be lost. God hangs on to that. God did not forget that. He did not let them get away from that. You mentioned earlier, this particular king go, oh, maybe I got away with it. Well, no, he didn't. Generations ago, oh, they got away with it. Well, no, there's a lot of suffering because of that.
Yeah. And you started this by talking about the, it didn't say he moved the altar. It talks about other things. The thing is that these are both related. If you will abuse one, you'll abuse the other. And that's what's going to happen. So don't abuse either. Don't get on the road. Don't do it. And that's why we build the wall. Are we keeping the wall? Oh, but that's such a trivial little thing. Okay? That's an attitude that has to change. Now we've got another hole in the wall we've got to build on. Okay, none was left except for the tribe of Judah. Did you catch that? Who mentioned that? No, George mentioned it a few weeks ago. Right? Compare also, we already read this from two, last week? I think it was last week. So for example, in 1 Kings, when they tear the kingdom apart, verse 13, however, I will not tear away all the kingdom, but I will give you one tribe. Okay? Which is interesting because we know that there's two tribes because there's the 10 and the 2, right? And then there are other passages which talk about two tribes. So the question is, what happened? All right, here's a map. Now, I want you to look at this map, and it took me hours to find this map. And then when I finally found it, I looked later on, and right there, voila, on the back of my Bible is one that does the same thing. Specifically, this. I want you to look at this map, and wait, don't look, tell me, in what tribe is Jerusalem? Anyone? Judah. Wrong. I would have said the exact same thing until actually last week. No, it's Benjamin. It's mostly Benjamin. You see that map? That map is not incorrect. Okay? For example, you go look it up in Joshua chapter 18, verse 28. It says, a whole string of verses, that Jebus, or Jerusalem, is in Benjamin. All right. Now, I bring that up to point out, do you see where Bethel is? Where is it? It's in Benjamin. Now, you remember, where did the northern kingdom, Jeroboam, in the northern kingdom put the bottom idol? In Bethel. Which means they both got part of Benjamin. They both got part of Benjamin. Now, I didn't take the time to figure out where the boundaries are drawn. I don't know if you can. You might not be able to. But my point is, they both got Benjamin. So, did Judah get Benjamin? Oh, on top of this, understand this at the same time. And when Benjamin goes back in Nehemiah from exile, they go back to Bethel. The point is that Bethel is in Benjamin also. Okay, so why is it there's only some places it talks about only Judah? It has to do with Benjamin's incomplete relationship with Judah, both territory and allegiance. It looks like some of Benjamin fought with Judah, and some of Benjamin fought against Judah. So it seems like not only was the territory physically split, but the people were too. All right? At the same time, bear with me for a second here, it also has to do with the language. Ephraim. Sometimes Ephraim, when it's talking about, all, in fact, we read it tonight if you were paying attention, or to that, I know you're paying attention, but Ephraim, for all 10 northern tribes. Hosea 5, it's all over. Ephraim, Ephraim, Ephraim. Why? Because it was the largest, it was the most prominent, it's where Samaria was. So this is Synecdoche, a part standing for the whole, one part standing for all of it. Now, the way they use language, Benjamin was reduced to the smallest tribe. Judges 19, the Levite, his wife leaves him, goes, plays the harlot, he goes and gets her, they come back through Benjamin, they want to have homosexual activity with him, the host sends out the concubine and his virgin daughter, and the daughter, you remember the whole story, and so they go and they kill him, and when they're done, they say one tribe is missing from Jerusalem. And then in chapter 20, verse 6, one tribe has been cut off. So Saul will say, I'm a Benjamite of the smallest of the tribes of Israel. So it might be as though this. Technically, there were two tribes, but realistically, one and a half tribes, or just one. Okay? So is something like that happening when it says two, and then one? I think it's got to do with both of these. I'll say this, though. Here's the point from it all. Don't look yet. That's right. So last week, George says, one tribe, and I said, what? Benjamin was inside of Judah. And that punk right there, that punk didn't even raise his hand. I was thinking about this as I was replaying this today. He didn't raise his hand because he turned around with one hand and I don't have it in this Bible. Okay, so he turns around with one hand and he points like that. And I don't know if he said anything, but as soon as he did it, I realized what I had done. And I thought to myself, that little punk questioned me. Can you believe it? Because you should never question the preacher. You haven't heard this yet. You should never question the preacher. Or you should always be willing to question and correct the preacher and the teacher. Even if it's a silly... This wasn't a silly point, but it's, you know, what happened. But be willing. Now, I'm not saying... be careful. Be justified. Or else it's going to be real discouraging, real fast for a lot of people. But if it's justified, you better be willing to do it. To say, hey, right there, Mr. Preacher. And bring them back to what the text says. Comments or questions on that? Thanks a lot, Jonathan.
First question, the situation with Benjamin, isn't that a situation where they tried to resolve it, they ended up finding a bunch of women from another tribe to, or no, a bunch of men to marry Benjamite women?
Yes.
Okay. Was one tribe in particular singled out for that?
No, it was actually some foreigners and some... They did it with some foreigners and they did it with some of their... There was a party.
Okay.
Basically, they were having a feast.
Yeah.
You remember the story.
I was trying to remember exactly.
Yep.
I didn't know. Maybe it was a bunch of people from Judah. And then, what about sending it?
Oh, okay, I knew you were going to ask. Okay, so you remember what Judah, and this is important for, well, it's important. Okay, so you remember what Judah and Simeon did.
Yeah.
No, Simeon and Levi.
Simeon and Levi.
Simeon and Levi did. You remember what Judah did, and you remember what Simeon and Levi did. So when Simeon and Levi go in and destroy all the people who they said, oh, let's circumcise you, and then you can marry everybody, and then they go and they murder them. In Genesis chapter 49, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jacob says to Simeon and Levi, you will not have portions of land. That's why Levi is spread throughout and Simeon is absorbed into Judah. To make up 12 tribes, that's why Joseph's son, Joseph is never mentioned, but Ephraim and Manasseh are. So you got 12 tribes. But then you come to Revelation chapter 14. I forget which one it is. Maybe it's 8, whichever. Simeon and Levi, yeah, Dan, is it Dan? Dan are mentioned. Where, so in other words, the idea is people say, oh, the future. Now I've just totally changed the direction of this discussion. But when they say Revelation is talking about the same thing, well, you can go to one place and say, no, it's not. Anyway, did that answer? I know it answered, but whether or not you... Okay, followed you. He was next.
I was going to ask that also, but my sort of second part of that is, could the sort of verbatim there being one tribe left, as opposed to, you know, we know they're technically being two and ten, could the one tribe left be making reference to just, because Judah is the one that Jesus was going to come through, and everything else was essentially trash. God was like, you guys are done. Everyone who cared about God for the other ones had come down. The northern kingdom is destroyed, and it's, okay, you've got one left, because this one has to be left.
Okay. I'm not going to say no, but while we're throwing out ideas, it could have been that he says to Rehoboam of Judah, I will give you one tribe, which is actually referring to another tribe. I will give you, Judah, one tribe, Benjamin. I can't say yes or no. The grammar allows for it, that's all. And your point basically stands. John?
In 2 Chronicles 15... Asa.
Yeah, yeah.
And Asa was king. Starting in verse 9, he gathered all Judah and Benjamin and those from Ephraim, Manasseh, and Simeon who were residing with them. For great numbers had deserted to him from Israel when they saw that the Lord his God was with him. So at one point there's a chunk of a number of people from some tribes that are nearby that say, hey, this guy's in a much better place to be. And I think at that point they can refer to Judah incorporating everybody that's actually living there, whether they're from the tribe or not.
Yeah. Alright. So next week, we'll stop now. Thank you very much for your participation. Next week, Lord willing, this is a good spot to talk about, very briefly, to talk about the lost 10 tribes, because they're now lost. Well, except they're not lost. And that's one of the passages that, no, they're not lost. And basically, these people who are confused will point out themselves that about now, in the history of Israel, less and less are there references to the tribes. In other words, there's a blending, and they don't, yes, we've got to maintain Judah, but there's not like, oh, the tribe, it's just not happening so much anymore. So you see.